Very conducive to a podcast, Jeremy. Pretzel chips. Good job. So anyways, Egwene is... Rams the dragon.
But man, these pretzel chips, right? Like, they're so good. The pretzel crisps. Why are they so good?
They're really good with hummus, too. There's something that 12-year-old me would have been like, fucking, what? You eat what? What? Hummus? What the fuck's hummus?
There is this cheese from Trader Joe's. It's a cheddar cheese with caramelized onions in it. And I don't know what it is about these pretzel chips and that caramelized onions, but they go together like peanut butter and chocolate.
You know what I did today? I made a goal for myself and I was hoping, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to make it easy on myself. I'm not going to rush this. If I hit this by the end of the summer, great. But today I did a 10-minute mile.
That's really impressive.
Yep.
I barely do those when I was in high school, bro. And I was an athlete.
And I didn't die. Like, I was just like, cool. Like, yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I mean, I was tired. I wasn't like, you know, but it wasn't like.
I think the fastest I ever did a mile was like 7 minutes and 50 seconds. And I was like, whew, fucking gonna die.
Yeah, that's.
Could run a comfortable like 9-minute mile. And that wasn't too bad. But then I still wanted to die, though, but it wasn't like actual. And I would always have first period PE, and it would always be the fucking cross country and the track dickheads in my class. And it's like, hey, I run a fucking 5.5-minute mile. I'm just like, great. I'll see you later.
And I run. I still don't get cross country. Like, track I get. Cross country, I'm still like, you know, sports exist.
Unless there's zombies or fucking trollocs chasing me, why do I need to run for a fucking mile ever?
You know what, Justin? That's what motivates me. I want to be able to run a mile at a decent pace and still have the energy to fight off the zombies.
It's like in Zombie Land. He's like, got to do cardio, man.
Exactly. I don't got to be fast. I just got to be faster than you.
I could power walk like a motherfucker. As long as they're not Dawn of the Dead running zombies, I'm fine.
All right, Crunch Master, are you ready? I don't want to.
We didn't even do an intro.
I know. That's why I'm just making sure.
I'm ready.
Thank the light, everyone. I am one podcast host is Ego Incarnate. Two podcast hosts is a Black Kettle Pot. Three podcast hosts is whatever the fuck this is. And these are my wolf brothers.
Sometimes I totally get what you say right off the bat. This time, no idea what you're talking.
I will be your pleasantly surprised to die because I don't know what just happened.
I think it's going to be in one of our clips today, but I don't know. At some point, Matt says, you know, one woman is good company, two women are trouble, three women are, you know, doom me to my deathbed. Or so I don't know what he's.
Time to leave town.
Yeah. I think that's what he actually says. Yeah.
Well, I'm a one woman man. So that's my thing for today. I don't know.
Oh my God, Jeremy. Oh my God.
Wait.
Holy shit. All right.
Wow.
We're going to, yeah.
Okay.
We're going right into it, huh?
We're going right into it. Where is it? Okay, here it is. I got to go back. We talk so much in this podcast. Every time I want to dig up, here it is. Cool.
Did you find his shit? No, he told me he came to your house and like dumped in your backyard. Did you find it?
All right. Share my screen.
Came to my, man, I thought I saw you. Did you at least say hi? Swear. Oh my gosh.
All right. Jeremy.
Roy, I said that to you guys. Never mind.
Is that who your wife really wants to be with?
Dude, she's totally looking at him in the reflection of my sunglasses.
Dude, look how thirsty she looks at that guy. Jeremy.
Oh my gosh.
How did you not notice in the moment?
I should have known.
Everybody, there is a man in a hairy shirtless man in Hawaii getting uncomfortably close.
Oh my God. You guys look like you're like literally in a forest all alone.
We are.
And then
I know.
But then there's that dude with his shirt off just beefing out.
I know. I was like, oh cool, these guys went on a hike and found somewhere to be alone. Nope.
Oh man. That's hilarious.
How did you even see that?
Well, it's just weird because you just see these, you see a hand, and then just like, what is going
on? Zoom in on it again, baby. Come here, look at this.
That's hilarious.
And this man, everyone out there, is only visible through Jeremy or through Jeremy's in Jeremy's sunglasses. You can see a reflection of his wife's smiling face and this shirtless hunk.
That was hilarious.
You're why even Lisa says, yeah, Amy looks a little thirsty for that dude. I think you probably need to have a talk, you guys.
Listen, I mean, look at the guy. Obviously, I mean, what are you going to do?
That dude will keep you warm at night.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done shaming people. I'm not shaming him. It's just hilarious in this context of anniversary photos.
Oh, what happened here?
All right, today Jeremy's going to press record on his podcast.
Well, I'm not seeing my microphone.
Could you be less engaged, Jeremy?
Everybody, the plane is going down.
This says system overload. You're going to have to just take it from the Zoom, man. Sorry. It's coming back. My Yeti's back.
Yeah, get the Yeti back. You don't have to record it, but get the Yeti back.
My Yeti's got back.
That's who that guy is. That guy's a Yeti.
Yeah, that's who what that it is.
Today we're going to talk about chapter 30. We're going to get into Matt. Matt is finally got the energy to get up. He has talked to, we're going to talk a little bit about some chapters going up to this. Egwene and Elaine. Is it Elaine? Eliana?
Yes, Elaine. Not Eliana. Elaine.
And who's the third? It's not Nynaeve, is it? I don't know. Anyways, they talk Matt into running an errand for them, knowing that he wants to get out of town anyways. And so he gets his strength up and he decides to go make a little bit of money so he can afford a boat.
Has he had the conversation with them yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's chapter 28, A Way Out.
Okay. Okay, cool.
So we're going to do chapter 30, the first toss. I'm going to start around 6:30.
The first inn Matt entered had three dice games in progress, men crouched in circles near the common room walls and shouting the wins and losses. He only meant to gamble an hour or so before finding a ship, just long enough to add a few coins to his purse, but he won. He'd always won more than he lost, as far as he could remember, and there had been times with Huron and in Shinar when six or eight tosses in a row won for him. Tonight, every toss won. Every toss. From the look some of the men gave him, he was glad he had left his own dice in his pouch. Those looks made him decide to move on. With surprise, he realized that he had nearly 30 silver marks in his purse now, but he had not won so much from any one man that they would not all be glad to see him go. Except for one dark sailor with tight curls, one of the sea folk, someone had said, though Matt wondered what one of the Athawan Mier was doing so far from the sea, who followed him down the darkened street, arguing for a chance to make good his losses. He wanted to reach the docks. 30 silver marks was more than enough. But the sailor argued on, and he had only used half his hour. So he gave in, and with the man, entered the next tavern they passed. He won again, and it was as if a fever gripped him. He won every throw. From tavern to inn to tavern he went, never staying long enough to anger anyone with the amount of his winnings. And he still won every toss. He exchanged silver for gold with a money changer. He played at crowns and fives and maiden's ruin. He played games with five dice and with four and with three, and even only two. He played games he did not know before he squatted in the circle or took a place at the table. And he won. Somewhere during the night, the dark sailor, Rob, he had said his name was, staggered away, exhausted, but with a full purse. He had decided to put his wagers on Matt. Matt visited another money changer, or perhaps two. The fever seemed to cloud his brain as badly as his memories of the past were clouded, and made his way to another game, winning. And so he found himself, he did not know how many hours later, in a tavern filled with tobacco smoke. Most of the patrons here seemed interested only in drinking as much as they could, but the rattle of dice and the shouts of players from another game in the far corner were almost submerged by a woman singing to a quick tune, "I'll dance with a girl with eyes of brown, or a girl with eyes of green. I'll dance with a girl with any color eyes, but yours are the prettiest I've seen. I'll kiss a girl with hair of black, or a girl with hair of gold. I'll kiss a girl with any color hair, but it's you I want to hold." The singer had named the song as "What He Said to Me." Matt remembered the tune as "Will You Dance With Me," with different words, but at that moment, all he could think of were those dice. "The king again," one of the men squatting with Matt muttered. It was the fifth time in a row Matt had thrown the king. He had won the bet of a gold mark, not even caring by this time that his Andoran mark outweighed the other man's Ileana coin, but he scooped the dice into the leather cup, rattled it hard, and spun them across the floor again. Five crowns. "Light, it can't be. Nobody ever threw the king six times running. Nobody." "The Dark One's own luck," another man growled. Matt was scarcely aware of moving before he had the bulky man by the collar, hauling him to his feet, slamming him back against the wall. "Don't you say that," he snarled. "Don't you ever say that." The man blinked down at him in astonishment. He was a full head taller than Matt. "Just a saying," somebody behind him was muttering. "Light, it's just a saying." Matt released his grip on the scar-faced man's coat and backed away. "I don't like anybody saying things like that about me. I'm no dark friend." "Burn me. Not the Dark One's luck. Not that. Oh, Light, did that bloody dagger really do something to me?" Gathering his belongings from where he had piled them behind him, Matt walked out of the tavern, leaving the coins where they lay. All he wanted was to be outside in fresh air where he could think. In the street, he leaned against the wall of the tavern, not far from the door, breathing the coolness in. The dark streets of South Harbor were all but empty now. Holding the quarterstaff upright in front of him with both hands, he lowered his head to his fists and tried to think at the puzzle from every side. He knew he was lucky. He could remember always being lucky, but somehow his memories from Emmons Field did not show him as lucky as he had been since leaving. The luck had come once he took the dagger from Shadow Logoth. "But I'm free of the bloody dagger," he mumbled. "Those bloody Aes Sedai said I was. Light, I'm rich. I'm bloody rich. Maybe it was something the Aes Sedai did. Something they did healing me. By accident, maybe. That could be it. Better than the other. Those bloody Aes Sedai must have done it to me." Whatever his luck tonight had come from, he did not mean to lose all that gold to a footpad. The man turned toward him, peered, then gave a start. "Time to find a ship to take me away from here." He squinted at the black sky, trying to estimate how long till dawn. 2, maybe 3 hours, he thought. He pushed away from the wall and started for the docks where the ships would be. At first, he thought the faint sounds behind him were echoes of his boots on the cobblestones. Then he realized someone was following him, and trying to be stealthy. Well, these are footpads, for sure. Hefting a quarterstaff, he briefly considered turning to confront them. But it was dark, and the footing on cobblestones uncertain, and he had no idea how many there were. "Just because you did well against Gawain and Galad doesn't make you a bloody hero out of a story." He turned down a narrower, twisting side street, trying to walk on tiptoe and move quickly at the same time. He was almost to the end when he saw movement ahead. 2 men peering into the side street from where it led out onto another, and he heard slow footsteps behind him, soft scrapes of boot leather on stone. In an instant, he ducked into the shadowy corner where one building stuck out further than the next. Gripping the quarterstaff nervously, he waited. A man appeared from back the way he had come, crouching as he eased himself ahead one slow step at a time. And then another man. Each carried a knife in his hand and moved as if stalking. Matt tensed. If they came just a few steps closer before they noticed him hiding in the deeper shadows of the corner, he could take them by surprise. Those knives were a great deal shorter than the practice swords, but they were steel, not wood. One of the men squinted toward the far end of the narrow street and suddenly straightened, shouting, "Didn't he come your way then? I have seen nothing but the shadows," came the answer in a heavy accent. "I wish to be out of this. There are the strange things moving this night." Not 4 paces from Matt, the 2 men exchanged looks, sheathed their knives, and trotted back the way they had come. He let out a long, slow breath. Luck. Burn me if it's not good for more than dice. His boots slipped on the tiles, and he decided it might be a good idea to think about getting back down into the street himself. Cautiously, he moved to the edge of the roof and peered down. But off to his right was a stone bridge running from the top floor of his building to one on the other side. His boots thumped onto the bridge, and he let himself roll the way he had as a boy falling out of a tree. He fetched up against the waist-high railing. Bad habits pay off in the long run, he told himself, as he got to his feet and picked up the staff. He turned from the railing and suddenly became aware of a man sharing the bridge with him. A man with a dagger in his hand. Matt grabbed at the hand as the knife darted toward his throat. He barely caught the fellow's wrist with his fingers, and then the quarterstaff between them tangled itself in his legs, tripping him to fall back against the railing, to fall half over it, pulling the other man on top of him. Balanced there on the small of his back, teetering with his assailant's bared teeth in his face, he was as aware of the long drop under his head as he was of the blade catching faint moonlight as it edged toward his throat. His finger grip on the man's wrist was slipping, and his other hand was caught with the quarterstaff between their bodies. Only seconds had passed since he first saw the man, and in seconds more, he was going to die with a knife in his throat. "Time to toss the dice," he said. He thought the other man looked confused for an instant, but an instant was all he had. With a heave of his legs, Matt flipped them both off into the empty air. For a stretched-out moment, he seemed to have no weight. Air whistled past his ears and ruffled his hair. He thought he heard the other man scream, or start to. The impact knocked all the air out of his lungs and made silver-black flecks dance across his blurring vision. When he could breathe again, and see, he realized he was lying on top of the man who had attacked him, his fall cushioned by the other's body. "Luck," he whispered. He expected the other man to be dead. Not many could survive a 30-foot fall to cobblestones with another's weight on top of him. But what he had not expected was to see the fellow's dagger driven to the hilt into his own heart. Such an ordinary-looking man to have tried to kill him. Matt did not think he would even have noticed him in a crowded room. "You had bad luck, fellow," he told the corpse shakily. He knew he should be on his way to the docks right then, and on the first vessel sailing, if it was a rotten tub full of old fish. But his knees were shaking hard enough in reaction that he could hardly walk. And what he wanted was to sit down for just a minute. Just a minute. To steady his knees. And then he was headed for the docks. The taverns were closer, but he started toward the inn. The common room of an inn was a friendly place where a man could rest a minute and not worry about who might be sneaking up behind him. Enough light came out through the windows for him to make out the sign. A woman with her hair in braids, holding what he thought was an olive branch and the words, "The Woman of Tanchico."
And in that tavern, an old friend.
There was a guy with a cloak.
There was a man.
The man who can't forget.
Oh, wow.
The man who can't.
It was a very haunting song.
Forget. I just say, let's get to the important things. Who doesn't like a nice pair of ankles? I mean.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Speak for yourself. My wife has sexy, sexy ankles.
Mine too.
She's got great legs and sexy ankles.
Agreed.
Fucking perfect.
About my wife, not your wife, obviously. I mean, I'm sure your wife is her fight. I'm just not going to say
thank you for complimenting my wife's ankles as well, Jeremy. I'm sure that's appropriate. Yeah, daddy, baby.
Move along.
I was looking at your Instagram photos, and your wife has fantastic ankles, sir.
Speaking of Instagram photos, I was watching, because I use my time wisely, I was watching Johnny B. Goode the other day.
Of course.
And there,
what, like Anthony Michael Hall, Johnny B. Goode?
Yes.
Oh, wow. There's no other
and
Johnny B. Goode.
Here's a piece of trivia.
I thought I was
Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in it.
And there's a scene in there.
Like 19, right?
There's a scene. Maybe even.
She was a kid.
She might have been 17 when they filmed it.
Right.
There's a scene in there where they zoom in on Anthony Michael Hall's face and Uma Thurman is playing with his nose with her feet. And I tweeted out, I tweeted that video and the tweet, oh, look, I just found her audition tape for Pulp Fiction.
No.
That's true.
Oh.
Johnny be good. Holy shit. So yeah, is I know you guys say that, like, well, I guess that's still Matt's luck. Like, is this just Matt for the rest of the series just falling?
I mean, this is just kind of scratching the surface, and that's why I wanted to play this one. I mean, I don't know what you think, Jeremy. I mean, this is one of the first times he really, like, he even is kind of like, wow, like, fuck, how much money do I have in my pockets? Like,
yeah,
what the hell? And like, he, you know, he's more just going by feel, I think, because he's winning. He's like, ah, I better switch taverns. You know what I mean? It's not like he's looking around or getting threatened. He's just like, it's like he gets a feeling. It's like, I should leave. And it, that's part of the luck too. But that's part of the luck too. It's just that kind of like, I got a feeling that I should do this right now. And even though if you're looking at it from a reasonable point of view, it wouldn't make any sense, but it's going to work out, you know?
What sets this into motion? Like, something had to have kicked this into motion, but they never officially cover it.
Jeremy, I don't know.
No, it's not something they ever.
It's got to be the dagger. The only thing that's happened between then and now is the dagger. So.
Yeah. And.
Well, the dagger, the healing. Yeah.
It's never talked about. Never brought up. It's like.
Maybe the Aes Sedai did it. No, Matt, they didn't do it. Well, I think part of it is old blood, maybe too. I don't know. They really never talk about it.
When Perrin, you know, all of a sudden out of nowhere can talk to wolves, it just comes on as, you know, nothing really brings it on. Nothing. It just does.
Those are his Teverin powers.
He's bestowed his Teverin powers.
My superpowers manifested themselves and I can talk to puppies.
I guess, yeah, the wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and the wheel didn't need Perrin to talk to wolves or Matt to win every throw or Rand to channel, and now the wheel needs that.
But when you really start, like, if once you get to the end,
Des, you got really low too. Like, I don't know if you're farther away from your mic or it just sounds like you're muted, kind of, or just.
How's this? Is this okay?
It still sounds kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it just got wonky for a second.
I'm going to talk for a minute.
I think it's fine now. I think it just slowed down for a second. So, oh, you know, he mentions the sea folk. They are also looking for Rand, Desmond.
Oh,
there's a whole nother people that you will meet later. They only live out on the ocean for the most part. I think they have some islands too, but mostly they live their lives at sea sailing.
Tremalking
Splice. But he was at one. There was a seafolk man at one of the pubs, and you don't see him a lot, but every time you start to see him after this, it's like they're looking for the Coramore or whatever, which is the dragon that's there. They have their own prophecies about Rand.
Are they looking? So they're just looking for the dragon, and Rand happens to be it.
Sort of like how the Aiel looking for, you know, he who comes with the dawn or whatever. It's the same thing.
He is he who comes with the dawn. He is the Coramore. He is the dragon reborn.
So does everyone want, well, some, I mean,
he is the Lord of the Morning.
Some people want him dead, but are most people looking for him because if he fights for them, then they'll rule the land? Like, what would the water folk do if they found him?
Yeah, they really, I mean, the only thing they do is they bring in supplies. So they establish like a trading.
Yeah, they basically have a treaty with him for some, you know, and it leads into some other shit. But
so they want to be the main supplier for all of his dragon shirts.
Yeah,
we go and get the tobacco from the two rivers and export it all over the world.
Someone's got to embroider all these shirts. Why? That's a good gig if you can get it.
I need all these shirts to say definitely not the dragon on them.
Definitely not the dragon. And oops, I killed a blade master. Those should be definitely shirts that we make.
Most definitely.
So also, if you start to trace Matt's luck, like the further you get into the story, you can really start to kind of like bounce back and trace his story to these kind of like, not always, but often the more deliberate that Matt is, the more kind of like wild his life is, even though he always works out where he kind of is needed, where he's where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. And even if he's like, no, I'm going south, I'm crossing that river, I'm getting the fuck out of here, he's going to end up back north on the ridge fighting somebody to save somebody's ass. Cause that's just like, that's what ends up with Matt. And it's always a series of random decisions or things that happen, and he ends up getting like pushed or pulled, and like it's his luck. It's always where he's always in the right spot at the right time.
Well, and that's with, I mean, I think with the show, it's going to be with everyone from the Two Rivers, but like especially the three boys, like they're just, you know, if they say fuck off and leave, it's because they're supposed to and they're needed somewhere else. Like they're always where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, because they don't have time to like not be where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
In only 8 episodes. So yeah. I have to figure that out. Another thing, one of the Aes Sedai is like, oh, don't, you don't need a quarter staff. You're safe here. Oh, no, no one is really safe in anywhere, but especially not in the tower. So,
and definitely not Matt.
Yeah, it's just, it's really cool. And yeah, and the next chapter is great too, when, you know, oh, and to the listener out there, we keep kind of talking about this off air, but we're going to start chapter hopping big time so we can finish book 3 before season 2 starts, because I just got to get through it. And we're, you know, the books are kind of going on my timeline. And, I think we're going to touch on enough of book 3 in season 2 that it'll be nice to move on to book 4.
FYI, I'm on book 9, by the way. No, sorry. I'm on book 11. I'm on book 11. And I started halfway after you.
I just bounce around to whatever I feel. I'll think of a certain scene and then I'm like, I'm going to go to that book. But I've been kind of, I keep going back and like doing the stuff that we're talking about because I know that's where Dez is. And
I'm going to start listening to it on straight double time and just like, you know what? I'm not going to catch it all. And that's just, that's fine. It's better than me never finishing the series. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I think it's better that I have that knowledge in there somewhere than be so far behind. And if I'd probably rather listen to the series twice really fast than one time really slow. You know, because when I listen to it really slow, I just kind of like, what? Where? I should re-listen to that chapter because I don't remember. It's just like, fucking let's go.
Well, and those guys aren't, I'm pretty sure they're not just foot pads, right, Jeremy? Like, they're after
him. No, they were after him. And the last guy was definitely a gray man.
Yeah, I was going to say, last guy is definitely a gray man, right?
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden he's just there. When he says, like, right before he flips off of the bridge, he says, time to toss the dice. And the gray man's like, he's speaking the old tongue. And that's why he's like, the dude's like, what?
Do you think Matt, now is the old tongue ever totally foreign, or is it just verbiage that's been lost to time, like toss the dice?
No, it's like fucking someone speaking Latin right now, kind of. I mean, that's the way I always take it. Like people like recognize it as the old tongue, but they don't have any fucking clue what they're saying, or like maybe they know a word or two.
God, I hope he starts doing that.
Dude, me too. He's got to.
Sorry, well, my whole diatribe.
Don't make that fucking face, Jeremy, you fucker. Yeah, no, they don't.
If they can make up a totally different sign language, then they can make up a couple of old tongue words.
Well, they already have a scene where they spoke the old.
They've already got that scene where they don't even put like subtitles in barely. I mean, they do, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. If they're going to do that, then they can give Matt a couple.
They made up fucking sign language, too. So, I mean, I got to think they're going to do something.
Maybe they'll just use Klingon.
That would work.
Oh, my God.
It would totally work. I'd be all for that. That would
be like Tupac said, fuck all y'all motherfuckers in Swahili. That's how that will go down, I guess. I don't know. Matt wins again, lose third. Yeah, no, Matt is really just starting to see how his luck runs. And you will see that his luck just runs him till the end of the game.
He doesn't know anything right now.
He's like, what is this? What is going on? And it's like, he has no idea. You know, nothing, Matt Cawthon.
But anyways, what my whole diatribe a minute ago was about is Matt is the tavern he walks into, just because we might not get to this chapter, is Tom is in there. And so Matt meets up with Tom, and I forget why is Tom already on his way out of town, or I forget why.
He was in Carheen and his like apprentice girl got killed in the Great Hunt. Remember? So he's like basically drinking himself into oblivion, just going around from town to town. And just it's Taviran that him and Matt happened to like run into each other. Right, Jeremy?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's his luck.
I wonder, I mean, because they talk about how Tom's not going to be in the second season. So maybe the third season, this is how they'll run into each other.
Oh,
possibly. Yeah. I mean, we'll have to see after the second season because we have no idea what's going to happen.
92 days. Yeah, I keep thinking there's more because this is a really good chapter and it's really cool, but I think it just kind of speaks for itself.
No, not a lot to break. Yeah, not a lot to break down. That's kind of why I thought it'd be good.
Matt's, because we know what Rand's up to. Perrin is like really learning what he's all about. And so now we get to see Matt come into his own. And you can only imagine when these three motherfuckers get together how unstoppable they are. So, like, don't fuck with Tarviren.
Jeremy, have you still not, like, read A Memory of Light more than once?
Yeah, still haven't. Yeah, that's my next thing. I'm going to read the last three.
I'm actually really excited for you to get the last, because you're on 11 and then, what, 12, 13, 14, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really excited for you to go through those again and see if you, like, because I know you weren't loving it. But I liked it. I was like, that was pretty good. And then I went back a second time and I was like, dude, that was especially the last book. I was like, fuck, it is like so fast paced and such a roller coaster ride. And it's so good.
No, I am looking forward to it. So hopefully I will enjoy it more this time. It's, you know, it was a raw wound, right? Like, you know, the guy who you've been reading books for 20 or something years, he died, or reading books, his books, he died. And then some guy steps in and It's never going to be the same. It can't be. And maybe I just had really high expectations, and I know I did.
After 7, 8, and 9 went, I'm kind of like, you know, do you think he would have had like the veracity to write it the way it should be? And
I don't know.
For that, I'm kind of glad Brandon Sanderson took over, because I think that he captured enough of his style of writing from the first few books when they have that really breakneck pace that it feel you get moments where you forget that you're not reading Robert Jordan, to me. And not all the time. Certain characters, definitely not. But there are certain characters where I don't know if there was enough notes, or maybe he had stuff pre-written a little bit to where he didn't have to change it a whole lot. But there are times when it's like you kind of forget that Robert Jordan's not writing it, and it's some of my favorite parts.
How much of it, Jeremy, was just, did you kind of have a way you hoped it would end? And no matter who wrote it, it was just like, oh, he zigged when I kind of wanted him to zig.
No, I think that if it would have been Robert Jordan, I would have been like, okay, that was his idea the whole time.
Okay.
So like if it was exactly the same, but it was Robert Jordan, you'd have been like, yeah.
Yeah, I would have been totally fine.
Okay,
with
that's
it.
Cool. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
I just don't, you know, again, I was telling Justin, it was just like some of the stuff was just not the way he would have written stuff. And so I was overly critical, I'm sure.
Yeah. When is that? Sorry, I'm just trying to check something here. I just got it. I just wanted to figure out if Gran Turismo had a release date yet.
God.
See Rand in Gran Turismo.
I am so excited.
You always liked your racing games.
Fuck yes. Love me some Gran Turismo. But I'm so, and because of that, oh, August 11th. Awesome. We're talking about Gran Turismo mid-August, right before season 2 drops. That's going to be my... Fuck you. I'm gonna do a podcast about a visual property. But speaking of video game turned movies, I really hope, I mean, he's got a lot of seasons. Hopefully he's got a lot of seasons of Wheel of Time left, so he'll be able to build back some good faith. But I really hope it doesn't like what's his name from Breaking Bad did the Need for Speed movie. And I don't think he's been in a movie since then.
Sure he has. El Camino.
And it was, Need for Speed was fine. It was a Need for Speed movie. Like, no actor ruined that movie. Like,
it was ruined from the beginning.
It was.
Who was never edible from the start.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on this? Everyone, we're going to start wrapping it up because we're going to be back next week with more shit to talk about. So we're going to wrap this one up. We're into Matt's luck, and that is fucking awesome. Thank the light for listening to our podcast. Please rate us, like us, and tell a friend about our show. Thank the light. Check us out on Twitter. We are Wolf Brothers at Parched Ailman. That is Wolf Brothers at Parched Ailman. Send questions and comments to thankthelight@gmail.com. Send questions, comments, and your season 2 predictions to thankthelight@gmail.com. Looking for another great podcast to listen to while you wait for the next episode of Thank the Light? Head on over to whatsoundsawesome.com and check out our great podcast lineup. We have comedy, spirituality, time travel movies, fitness and nutrition, and awesome women in the form of All the Answers, Truth Not Trends, Time, Pot, Be Brave, and That Fitness Couple. You can find them at whatsoundsawesome.com or wherever you find fine, free podcasts. And don't forget, I'll kiss a podcast host who smells of weed. I'll kiss a podcast host who tastes of cheese. I'll kiss a podcast host who sounds like me.
You nailed it.
I mean, may you always find water and shade. That's all I got to say. I can't top that.
Let's bring back the hashtag as Billy Zane as Asmodian too.
Billy Zane as Asmodian.
Billy
hashtag.
Zane!
Dragon!
Asmodian has not been cast yet, right? There's still hope, right?
As far as we know. Fingers crossed.
Billy Zane! Let's do this.
Dude, he would be so perfect. Just think about him telling the stories and stuff when he's like, well, Dragon. Women channeling is not like men.
It's going to be a walk-off.
Oh, holy shit.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Just FYI, this has got to be my last one too, guys. I can't do one more.